by the way, I did want to mention the about the hurricane relief and all that, that we are, our church is part of the Southern Baptist Convention, which is about, I don't know, it used to be 40,000 churches, now I think it's about 50,000. And one of the probably one of the advantages of that is that we're part of a big relief effort that's always there in all these kind of disasters. There's, if you feel called to be part of that and you'd like training and go, and a lot of times it's helping with meals. There's also teams to help people rebuild their homes. Some of that obviously isn't, you know, the Houston thing, they're more like doing the meals and rebuilding starting. Florida's getting geared up for that. And other places, the Caribbean, there's teams that'll be going out there. So if you're interested in any of that and you'd like to be part of this, because I know, you know, you see this stuff on TV, you see pictures on the internet or something, it's like so devastating and so horrible. And sometimes you'd like to be able to actually do something. And obviously praying is something, but sometimes you might like to get your hands dirty as well and help and be part of it. And we do have channels and ways that you could do that if you'd like to. So if that's if you feel called into that, talk to me and I can point you in the right direction. So anyhow, want to do that. I also have as I've been kind of going around, like that's kind of like the big, huge thing that's out there. Everybody sees it. Now, if you want to go micro level on what we could do in our community to make a bit of an impact, I usually in the morning I get up early and take a walk. And a lot of times I walk from my house down Mollywood, I think it's Bancroft, then take Grossmont Boulevard down to where there's stores and stuff. Anyhow, when I walk through there every day, I've noticed that the fire station, I think it's Fire Station 13, is on the corner of Bancroft and Grossmont. Here it is. That's where it is right there. And they put in a yard that was kind of like a low-maintenance yard, but I think it's been receiving kind of below the low-maintenance thing to where it's like no maintenance. So it's got like weeds growing into the sidewalk, the beds. There's not that much to it, but it's pretty bad. So as I've been walking through there, like for quite a while, and I started off with, man, like things are hitting me. And, you know, then there's this branch hitting me and I'm like not happy about it. Then I walk the next day and it's like, oh, this is like, then I finally get to where somebody should do something about this. And then after a few more weeks of that, then I'm like, I wonder if we could do something about this. And so, anyhow, I've got a couple more pictures of the area. See, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but every time I walk by there, I get hit by those, okay? And then the rest of the yard is, it's just kind of overgrown. Everything was looked really nice. There's a few weeds, but just not very cleaned up, and these things probably need to be trimmed back. Anyhow, let's go back one more. Anyhow, so I started thinking about that a couple weeks ago, and I was like, walking by there every day. Then I went one day and knocked on the door of the fire department and to see. Well, no, and it says, if no one's here, call this number. Forget it. Then I went by there a few times, never anybody there. It's kind of like, I think they just show up, and when there's a fire, everybody runs down there and grabs a truck and goes to it. But anyhow, so I called the fire department a couple days ago. I said, hey, I noticed your Fire Station 13 yard's kind of a little straggly there. And then they're like, yeah. I go, well, what if we kind of organized a group and came down and kind of cleaned it up a little bit? Oh, well, I don't know. You have to talk to the city. Okay. Talk to the city maintenance crew, da, da, da. Okay. So do you have their number? Yes. So I call over there, left a voicemail, and then they call me back the next day. And then I talked to them, and I said, well, look, I'm a pastor. I'm over here across the street from Grossmont High School. Go by there. Would if we were interested in organizing a group to kind of clean that up a little bit, just maintain it a bit? Some of it's just picking up the trash. Some of it's there's a few little weeds. Some of it's trim a few things back. And she's like, oh, we just don't have time or money to keep up with. We only have people go by there once every 2 weeks and just pick up the trash, and that's it. So she said, we would love it if you could do that. So anyhow, I'm just giving you, like, if you went, like, oh, man, I would totally go and repair all of Florida and Houston and the islands out there. Well, but I can't. Okay, well, here's something you could do. It's pretty easy. Just talk to me. If we can get 5 or 6 people together, go down there for an hour, we'll probably get it all done. She said, let her know when we wanted to come because she'll put out a green dumpster. We just throw all the junk in it. So, and she'd be very, very, and I think it would be a chance to like, okay, here's our community. We want to just clean it up a little bit and make it a little bit nicer and let people know, hey, we're here and we're part of this city. So anyhow, that's one thing. We're going to go, we're moving on. Last time, we just finished going through the book of Malachi, which is the very end of the Old Testament. But now I want to go back and we're going to do, I put on the bulletin, I think it says Kings and Kingdoms. So where we're going to do is, I thought I'd use the same timeline just to kind of give you a view of where we are. Because the Old Testament's pretty big. There's a lot of stuff in there. And sometimes it helps, at least it helps me, to kind of visualize, like, where are we in the Bible and in the timeline of things. From basically the creation to the end of the Old Testament, we're going to be really in a crucial time, which is where it's the at the very, it starts at the very end of the period of Judges and then goes through all the different kings. Now, we're in the book of 1 Samuel, and we're going to start there. So if you have your Bible, you want to open it for 1 Samuel. If not, I'm going to put the text up on the screen. But 1 Samuel really deals with 3 main characters. There's, believe it or not, Samuel, and then he's kind of the transition guy from the period of the judges into the kings. Then we have Saul, who's the first king, and we kind of see his rise and fall. And then David, and in 1 Samuel we basically see his rise. In 2 Samuel we see kind of the wheels fall off his wagon as well. There's a couple things I wanted to say about this that before I get really started. And that is, I showed last week, I think I showed that little Bible project video on Malachi. And and one of the things I was studying and I watched the deal, and one of the things that Tim Mackey, who's the guy who does the talking on that, said, which I think is really true, is that these people that we read about in these books in the Old Testament, they're not necessarily, it's not like we put up their lives because, wow, these guys are all perfect saints, and we just need to like kind of be, that is what I want to be. I think it's more like, here are some people that God worked in their life. They all have flaws, and a lot of them have major flaws, and they're all flawed. And it's not that we want to be that, it's that we see ourselves that we are that. We're also flawed individuals that God worked in their lives, and God can work in your life. And I think as we approach it along that line, and we see that really ultimately the whole story of the Old Testament is about God dealing with flawed individuals, and until the point where, look, the only solution for this is Jesus. And he approaches flawed individuals a lot of different ways. And a lot of different types of flaws. And there's just issues with everyone. And more than thinking, Elkanah is just the guy I want to be. It's more like, no, I see myself in him. You know, Peniah is the one I want to be. No, I see myself in her. Hannah is who I want to be. Maybe. But the problem is she's got flaws. And we see ourselves in that. Can we get a little help here on the keynote dropped off for me? So as we look at this, that's kind of the main thing I wanted to just mention is that's kind of how we're going to approach this. I really, my goal right now is to go from 1 Samuel through 2 Kings. We may take some breaks at the different books because otherwise this will be the first of a series of about 3 years. So we may do that. But we may take a few breaks, and I know I've got scheduled in holidays and a few other things, some special speakers. So we're going to go through it, and I'm going to plan on doing it as opposed to, like, if we were going through Philippians or Ephesians or Malachi, not as much, but especially the New Testament letters type books, they have a lot of information just wound really tight. And so you kind of have to just take little bits and pieces, then occasionally step back and look at the big picture, but there's so much in every little paragraph that you really want to dig in and see what's there, unpack it. These stories are more like they're written that, yeah, there's some cool key verses, but the whole thing is written, it's a big story. And so we're going to take more than a chapter almost every time. And like today, we're taking a chapter and a half. We'll be doing 2-3 chapters at some times, maybe more. Sometimes some of the stories are pretty tight or it's a pretty long chapter, so we may just do one chapter. But the whole point is we're going to be looking at these more as stories that they are and how we can see ourselves and how God worked in their life and then how he works in our lives because we're just the same. Anyhow, that's kind of my introduction to the whole thing, so you've got it. And let's just start in 1 Samuel chapter 1. There was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, and Ephrathite. So anyhow, all that's to say, this is the part I know when you read this verse in your Bible, you probably just kind of skim over it. But let's just kind of break it down a little bit. And I think the easiest way is the man's name is Elkanah. That's who we're going to be talking about. And he's from the hill country of Ephraim. And he's from this Ramathaim Zophim, which is also just called Ramah. So kind of look, here's like an overall of the map. The green represents the part that became the kingdom under Saul. But then this little box is kind of zero in on this verse, really. So let's kind of focus in on that a little bit. And I just wanted to mention a couple things here. I got the pointer. Here's Jabus. That's later renamed as Jerusalem. And he's from here, Ramah. And then really this is going to be about their trip to Shiloh. Because Shiloh, before Jerusalem became the center of Jewish worship, Shiloh was the center of Jewish worship. And it was there for almost 400 years. This is where the tabernacle was set up, and the people would go there and worship. And that was throughout the whole period of the judges until most of the way, until partially into David's kingship. And that was a period of, I think, 369 years is what they say, but, you know, approximately 400 years. And so that's kind of where all the, when she prays, when she goes to the temple, or I mean, tabernacle and all that, it's not in Jerusalem, it's in Shiloh. And they go up, it says they go up every year to Shiloh. So that's just to give you that map. And there's the line. So here we go. Samuel, okay. And there's the place again. I'm not going to go over it again. Here it is. He had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. The name of the other, Peniah. And Peniah had children. But Hannah had no children. And this was one of those things that was like, wow, you know, you'll see how the story plays out. But, you know, it was really important if you had children or didn't have children. And this was something that was really very important. So now this man, Elkanah, used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts of Shiloh. There were two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, that were priests, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peniah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. So she had at least four children, and probably more like six at least, because if you said, if she had two, you would say to her sons and to her daughters. But if you have more than two, then you could use the all. So she, who knows? It doesn't say how many children she had, but guessing at least all her sons and daughters, the minimum you could really come up with would be five, because you would have all her sons would be the three of them, and then daughters, it doesn't use the word all. So maybe she had five children or more. And so she has these children. And Peniah, I'm sorry, Elkanah, we give the sacrifice, and they later on we're going to see they sacrifice a bull. Then they would give a portion to her and her children. And then, but to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her. Though the Lord had had closed her womb. And her rival, Peniah, used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So you have two women. You've got kind of a strange situation here. You've got Elkanah. He's got two wives. Among the two wives, there's Peniah. She's been blessed. She's got a bunch of kids. Then you've got Hannah, who wants a bunch of children. or she wants children. She wants something, okay? And then because the husband really loves Hannah more, he blesses her by giving her this double portion. When she gets a, you know, you give enough food for Peniah and her kids, then you give twice that much to Hannah. And you can tell, kind of, it doesn't say this per se, but that bugged Peniah. And so she had, the thing she had on Hannah was, I got kids. And you know what? No matter, and she could say things like, hey, no matter how much he loves you, at the end of the day, his inheritance, all that's going to my kids. And you're going to be cut out. And she bugged her and, you know, provoked her grievously to irritate her just because she knew where the button was to push. So it went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why are you weeping? Or why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? I've kind of always thought that Elkanah, he's kind of a guy. He's like, I don't understand why you're crying so much. I love you. I love you. And look, aren't I better to you than 10 sons? And wouldn't you be happy? Like, can't you be happy just with me? And it kind of reminded me, I know I read this several years ago, about 5 years ago, I got a negative Yelp review. And it was about from a guy. It was a Yelp review. There was an old chapel Yelp page. And on it, a guy that I had known from The Rock, he was upset with me about some stuff back at The Rock. He got married, and I did their wedding. And then a few months after they got married, he came to me, and he said, look, John, I don't think I'll read the review. I have it here, but I have it if you want to read it. It basically states the facts pretty clearly. And I agree with the facts, and I would never ask to have it removed because I stand by the facts. But basically, he said that I gave him bad biblical advice. But here was the advice. After him and his wife got married, shortly after they got married, she was pregnant, expecting a baby. And she was happy about it. And he didn't think they'd been married long enough to have a baby at that point. And I kind of said, and so he came to my office and we talked about it. I go, well, if you're married, you've been married long enough to have a baby. And he goes, well, I think, but he was very spiritual. And he was like, look, I think we should be a blessing because there's so many parents that want to adopt a child. So we should give our baby up for adoption. I asked his wife, well, what do you think? No way. And I'm like, I told him, look, dude, this isn't going to work out well for you. He goes, no, this would allow us to strengthen our marriage. I go, look, you're not going to take a woman, rip the baby out of her arms, give it to somebody else, and think you're going to strengthen your marriage. Like, maybe you could do that first part, but the second part's not going to go with it. So you can't do that. And I'm like, look, you're afraid. I understand you just got married. I understand the financial situation's a little tough. I understand that. Hey, look, a lot of people have been born in the world. And once you have the baby, it'll be okay, but you can't do that. No, you can't do that. So basically in the Yelp review, he says, I gave bad biblical advice because I sided with his wife on this one. Although later on in the review, he does mention that, well, now my daughter is the most precious thing to me in this. Anyhow, so okay, Elkanah. I should have changed his name to Elkanah. Look, aren't you better to her than this child? I don't think so. So it went year by year. She goes up. The other one's there. She's crying because she really wants to have a baby. She really wants to have this child. And then the husband, he's doing what he thinks is the best way to comfort her. Like, hey, you got me. Yeah, sorry. After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now Eli was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. So they got done. He said that to her. She kind of has like the feminine side to her, I think. He says this, which he thinks he's being comforting, and it causes her to go out of the room crying and go someplace and cry and pray. And Eli's sitting there. So she's deeply distressed and prayed and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. And so she said, look, God, look, all I want is a baby. If you give me a boy, if you give me a son, I'm going to dedicate him to the temple. He's going to live here. He's going to serve you. And this no razor shall touch his head, that's a Nazirite vow, very similar to the last judge in Judges, which we're following right after that, was Samson, who was also a Nazirite. And remember, his strength came. They cut his hair and all that stuff. That we can go into more details there, but we're not going to. So I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life and no razor. Look, I am going to dedicate this child absolutely and completely to you, Lord. And she continued praying before the Lord. Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart. Only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli took her to be a drunken woman. And Eli said to her, how long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. But Hannah answered, no, my Lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman. For all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. So she's got this. Eli hears her or kind of sees her, and she's over here crying and kind of mumbling, but you can't not really saying anything out loud. And he thinks, oh man, I don't know what they had for dinner, but she should have food with her wine. And she looks like she's drunk. And she's like really upset. So he says that, and she's like, no, I'm just troubled in my spirit. I'm just asking God for this baby, and I really, really want this baby. And I'm really choosing, like, it's like all I want. I was kind of, I read this story yesterday in the about this woman, about a woman. Let me put her picture up here. This woman, and her name is, now I don't see her name here. Anyhow, her name is Carrie, this woman. And this was I saw this on the news yesterday. It says, a Michigan woman who chose to forgo cancer treatments that would have prolonged her life but ended her pregnancy died Saturday, 3 days after giving birth to her sixth child. I'll see you in heaven, Nick DeKalb said to his wife just before she died. We stayed with her until she took her last breath, he said. It's in God's hands now. The 37-year-old woman died surrounded by family at University of Michigan Hospital in Ann Arbor. And her baby, named Life Lynn, was born prematurely at 24 weeks and 5 days into the pregnancy. The couple, who are from Western Michigan, a city of Wyoming, have 5 other kids who range in age from 2 to 18 years old. Nick DeKline said that the family is strong in its Christian faith. My wife loves the Lord, and she loves her children more than anything, he said Friday. It's painful, he added, but this is what she wanted. She wanted to protect this child. And then it said that in April she found out she had glioblastoma in her brain. And then they said, well, you could take chemotherapy, but two weeks after she found out about that, she had she found out she was pregnant, and then she so basically it came down to you know what, you can take this chemotherapy which will extend your life. This is the same cancer that my brother-in-law, who died a short time ago, had, and his, with the cancer treatments, it extended his life out about, they thought he was going to live for 3 or 4 months like she did, but he lived for about almost 4 years, and so she could have extended her life. But then the problem is, if you take that, it's going to end the pregnancy and the baby will die. And so she had to make a choice, and so she chose, look, no, I'm not going to do this. The baby's going to live. And they said the baby was born. It was like a pound and a half. And it's in the neonatal unit. But it's, they said it's projected to be fine. It'll be there for a couple months. And anyhow, I just felt like going back to Hannah real quick, that don't regard your woman. Like this whole prayer, the whole thing she's doing, it's because there's something inside her that she really, really wants to have this baby. And she really, and like, this is going to take priority over anything. And I think like this other woman, Carrie, it's like, you know what? There's a point to where there's this something that God's put inside, especially women, that's like, you know what? I'm going to give whatever, including my life, for this baby. And that's kind of where she was. And so anyhow, I'll go back to her. And then Eli answered, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him. And so this is really a huge answer to prayer for him. Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him. And Eli went from seeing her kind of making like a judgment call that, look, she's drunk, and when's she going to get out of here? To, oh wow, I get what's going on here in your life. And I'm praying, and may God just grant you this request. And she said, let your servant find favor in your eyes. Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. So she's like, wow, this is like, gave her an assurance that, you know what, God is hearing her. God is going to respond to her prayer. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord. Then they went back to their house at Ramah, and Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And in due time, Hannah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Samuel, for she said, I have asked for him from the Lord, which means, you know, God's granted me what I asked for, and that was Samuel, so she named him this. Then the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifices and to pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, as soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever. She says, look, we're not going to go up there until the baby's weaned. Then when we go up there, we're going to leave, I'm going to offer him, give him to the service of God, and he'll be there for the rest of his life. So we're going to hold off on the first until he's weaned. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up to her along with a 3-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine. And she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull, and they brought the child to Eli. And a couple things that you can pick out of this story here. When she took a 3-year-old bull, that was like the biggest offering you could give. Like, I mean, unless you brought more than one. But as far as, you know, like when Jesus, remember when he was went to the temple and they were going to offer him to the Lord, they took a couple doves. That's like the cheapest offering. Then you could also do sheep and or goats, and then you could do bulls, and bulls are the most. And a 3-year-old bull is a full, I mean, for you and I, that's a pretty good size. That's a full-grown bull. And so she takes this bull up there, the ephah of flour, the skin of wine. She brings this up. She's taking this, and this is for, you know, I'm offering this to the Lord. But more important than all those offerings is they brought the child to Eli. And she said, "Oh, my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who is standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him. Therefore, I have lent him to the Lord as long as he lives." He is lent to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord there. So she's like, "You know what, God? The biggest thing in my life that I wanted more than anything else, I was getting my husband who loved me more than 10 children. I was getting the double portion. I was getting all this. None of that mattered. All I wanted was this child. But here you go, Lord. Here, take the most important thing in my life. And I want him to be given to you to honor you." And then she had this song she made up, or this psalm that's kind of a song. And we'll just go through this. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble bind on strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry have ceased to hunger. The barren has borne 7, but she who has many children is forlorn." You kind of see the prayer that's going on in her life. You know, the mighty are broken, the feeble are bound up with strength. Those who are full, now they're hiring themselves out to get bread, but those who are hungry, you've given them everything they need. The barren has borne 7, but she who has many children is forlorn. "There is none holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you. There is no rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the warriors are broken, but those who stumble are armed with strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for food, but those who were hungry are hungry no more. She who was barren has borne 7 children, but she who has had many sons pines away. The Lord kills and brings life. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes rich and makes poor. He brings low and he exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts up the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he sets the world. He will guard the feet of his faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them will thunder in heaven. Against them he will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." Then Elkanah went home to Ramah, and the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli the priest. Now, her whole psalm is all about how life changes. She was the one that felt like such an outcast. She didn't have what she wanted. She felt like it was completely out. She was the one who, although she had food, she felt hungry on the inside. She was the one. And then she prayed, and God brought into her relief and fixed the whole thing. And now the one who, especially if Peninnah had been asking, you know, telling her, "Well, my children are going to be..." "No, not now. I'm the only one with children." "No, not now." And it changed everything. And her life was completely changed. Look, I was thinking about this and how everybody in this whole situation reacted to the situation. And I was thinking about how we find ourselves in difficult situations at times. It's kind of like part of the human experience is difficult situations. Although it is also true that, here we go, we find ourselves in difficult, hard situations. But it's also true that the one situation that what's hard for you is hard for you. And what's hard for someone else, honestly, if you put them together, you might be in different leagues. But we all face things that in our lives are hard for us. And as I was kind of thinking about this, I was thinking of some things that we could learn from these characters in the story about how to deal with situations that are hard. And I think one of the first things that we recognize and we need to recognize is that none of us are perfect. like, you know, there's always plenty of blame shifting and, you know, well, you could, there's always could be better, would be better, should be better. I had this opportunity to do this. And, you know, you can kind of second guess your whole life because you're not perfect. And kind of as I went through these, as I was thinking about these different people, let's just kind of take a look at them real quick. Elkanah. Now, he had multiple wives. He had two wives, at least, we know of. And we're not sure why that is. There's some perfectly legitimate reasons he could, okay. But, you know, there's occasions where people had to marry their brothers. The brother died. They have to marry the wife. And it's really to save her family and life. And he could that could be. There's no indication of that, though, because the children evidently are his. And in that situation, the children would be the brothers. So that's not really true. Maybe, you know, maybe he took a second wife because Hannah couldn't have children. Maybe, you know, there's whatever is, once he had two wives, and then he starts really he shows significant favoritism to Hannah, which then creates problems for Hannah, who he's trying to favor, because Peninnah, she's upset because she's, look, I've got children and I'm being, you know, like, hey, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. And part of the whole thing is Elkanah's the head of the home and it kind of all starts with him. And you know what? He's causing the situation to be a major problem. Then we get to Peninnah. And she's not happy with her situation either. They wanted to have children. She had children. But you know what else she wanted? She wanted to be loved. And he didn't love her. And he made it clear he didn't love her. And she was like, she, even though she had all the children, she has everything, she's doing exactly, you know, what I'm here for. And he doesn't really appreciate it. And she's feeling bad about it, which then she takes that out on the other wife. Hannah. Hannah loved by the husband. So it's funny to me is Hannah wanted what Peninnah had. Peninnah wanted what Hannah had. And both of them miserable. And then Eli, he's the man of God and he's misinterpreting the whole situation. And you know, it's so easy to look on some situation and before you get the facts and before you even know what's happening, you make these initial judgments that could be so far off you don't even know where you are. Now, Eli later came around. We're going to get more into Eli later on. He becomes more of a significant character, and it mentioned his sons. They're going to be, we'll talk about them next week. I thought I was going to originally go into all, every single person mentioned, but these are the main characters here. And I think that we've all been in positions where maybe we're the leader and what we're doing is we're just messing things up. I remember Gunner once, when he was a instructor down at Bud's, they have, everybody's divided up into these boat crews for the Zodiac rafts that they paddle around, and there's like seven or eight in each group. And he said he was watching this group and they have to do what they call log PT. So they have to hold a log. You get eight guys holding a log and then you all have to do sit-ups together while you're holding this log. Well, no one guy can do a sit-up holding that log. And they used to have a log, a big, huge, round one that they called Misery. And they said, hey, misery loves company. So there you guys go. But anyhow, so they just, the regular logs, and he said he was watching and they couldn't get the log up. Because then he said he was kind of watching what was going on and one of the guys that was the head of the boat crew was an officer. And Gunner could say, well, he's not getting them all on the same page. He's not getting them all in the same rhythm. So they can't. So part lift, they can't. The weight comes here, then they can't. And they're all fighting against each other. So Gunner says, he tells the officer, hey, you get out. Now there's seven guys instead of eight. Okay, on my count, go. They all lift it. He asked the officer, what do you think the problem is here? I am, sir, Instructor Hansen. And part of that is sometimes you're the leader and you're the problem. And Elkanah was the problem. And then you have Peninnah and Hannah. To me, they're two sides of the same coin. But then the question is, what do you do about it? You ever have something you want that someone else has, and yet they want what you have? That's what life is. Penea, she just kind of, instead of like, it never says she prayed and asked God to help her husband love her or to be the woman that she needed to be or anything like that. She just was like, nee, 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 which is easy to do. And Hannah, she felt horrible for years. And she goes down, and she also wanted what Penea had. She's like, I want what she has. But you have me, according to Elkanah. Isn't that, aren't I more wonderful than any children could be? And no, not really. And so then this gets them to like, look, I think when we look at these people and look at the people in the story, we can kind of see ourselves here. We've all been through all these kind of things. Your situation might be a little bit different than any of these particulars, but there's places where you're messing it up. You're not happy. You think that you want something that someone else has. And the ironic thing is they want what you have. And then, or you're misjudging completely the situation without finding out any facts. So, and this kind of goes to the second one. We tend to want what others have. Hannah has this, you know, Penea has this. They're not happy, either one, unless they get both. They both want children. They both want to be loved. So then the third thing is, look, ask God for what you want. I mean, that was the right, Hannah did the right thing, is she goes to the Lord, and she kept praying, and she kept praying. And, you know, we read this story. The story takes a few minutes to read. You know, honestly, you can read the whole thing in probably about under 5 minutes, and it's all, the whole thing's resolved. But if you read in the story, they went up year after year after year. Penea had at least 5 children. That would take probably close to 10 years minimum. And meanwhile, she's rubbing it into Hannah. See, a lot of times we think, well, look, I read the story in 5 minutes, so hey, I've had to wait and deal with this issue longer than 5 minutes, so that's just not viable today, guys. No, it took, read the story. This was years of her wanting this. And part of the reason that that psalm that she made at the end came out, and the joy and the pressure and the song and what was in her heart, was she, if she would have gotten married and Penea would have had a child, and then she had a child and Penea had another one, she would have been happy to have the children. But we wouldn't have that psalm. She would have never had the exhilaration of having that first child that she had. She never would have felt what she felt. She never would have had, she just wouldn't have gone through the same thing. There would have been probably other bickering and fighting going on in their home because they were bickering and fighting to begin with. But part of the thing is God was doing a work in her life, and I think God is telling us he wants to do a work in our life. And I can almost guarantee you that pretty much everybody in this room has something that you just wish you had. And some of them are good things, and some of them aren't. And some things you're getting, you've just recently gotten, and some things that you've been hoping for and maybe praying for years, and it hasn't happened yet. And your question is like, what are you going to do with this? And I think this is where, ask for God what you want. Look, ask him. And don't quit asking. I like, one of my favorite verses is, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourselves in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. You know what? Here's what Hannah did. And is that she went up with Elkanah, and every year they kept being faithful. They took their offering. They took it up. They went faithfully 1 year after another year, after another year, after another year, and they're asking and asking and asking. And she's praying until finally she's there. I get the picture that Hannah is at the end of her rope. Like, this is it. I can't take another day of this. And she goes and she gets on her knees and she starts praying. And she's just even, she's not even speaking anything out loud. She's praying, she's crying, she's mumbling, she's weeping. And until Eli looks at her and goes, she's drunk. And God is, and little do they realize that this is where she needs to be so that God would respond to her prayer. One of my, there's a couple different things Jesus teaches about this. When the disciples say to Jesus, Lord, teach us to pray. And he gives them the Lord's Prayer. You know, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, etc. Most people are pretty familiar with that, or have heard of that. If you don't know that song, if you don't know that prayer, talk to me and I can point it out to you in the Bible. But the part I wanted to mention is, right as he finishes that prayer, and he's still answering the question, Lord, teach us to pray. He said to them, which of you who has a friend will go to him at midnight and say, friend, lend me 3 loaves, for a friend of mine has arrived on a journey and I have nothing to set before him. And he will answer from within, do not bother me. The door is now shut. My children are in bed. I cannot get up and give you anything. I tell you that though he will not get up and give him anything because he's his friend, yet because of his impudence, he will rise and give him whatever he needs. And I tell you, ask and it shall be given. Knock and the door will be open, right? And it's like, look, so you go to your friend at midnight. He's in bed. You know, and you figure, like, we think of our houses, and it's bad enough somebody wakes you up at midnight, okay? That's bad enough. But on the other hand, if it's midnight and you have, and you know, part of the thing you have to watch, they lived in places where it was dirty. The floors, you didn't have like vacuum cleaners. You didn't really have, you couldn't mop them. They're like stone floors that your feet are going to get dirty. Look, and they usually would wash their feet before they get in bed. So now look, if I get out, I'm going to have to walk across the floor. I'm going to get my feet dirty. I'm going to have to wash my feet. I'm going to have to do this. Look, it's midnight. My kids are asleep. We're living in a one room thing. You're going to wake them all up. No. Hey, I still need my friend. I just come and I need some bread. Then he's like, hey, no, hey. Finally, like, dude, let me get up and get you some bread. You're making it worse. But he says, you know what? When you pray, that's the picture. Hannah was praying until, you know what? Hannah was at the point, if she was the guy at the door, she's at the point of like, I don't know if I'm going to keep praying. But you know what? When we keep praying and keep asking and keep believing that God can do, look, there's no thing that you're going to ask for that God can't give you. Now, we're little children sometimes and we want things that aren't good for us or that we aren't ready for. Hey, you know, God, give me, You know, Noah was here, and you know, if Noah comes up to me and goes, "Hey, Grandpa," you know, I'd do a lot for him. Okay, he says, "Hey, Grandpa, I want a 357 Magnum." No. Keep asking, but that's not going to happen. Okay, you're not big enough. You're not old enough. You don't know what you're asking for. It's just ridiculous. And I think sometimes we're asking, but on the other hand, we keep asking. Because you know what? If Noah keeps asking and asking and asking, there could be a day where you go, yeah, I think you're ready now. His mother doesn't agree with me. But hey, you know what? That's why there's grandfathers. No. But anyhow, you know what I'm saying? It's like, but like all I'm saying is there's things that, okay, how about a car? Noah, you can't drive a car. Noah, you can't run a lawnmower. Noah, you can't do this. There's a bunch of stuff you can't really do when you're 3 years old. And there's stuff that we can't do right now, but God's saying, look, if that's in your heart, because a couple things happen when you pray. One is that God, sometimes he just wants you to ask him. He says, you have not because you ask not. And, you know, another verse here that goes this, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, and give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. That's from 1 Thessalonians. And like, look, God wants you to pray. He wants, but sometimes, you know what? You pray and you pray and you pray, and then you realize, you know, I don't really want that. This kind of goes to my financial advice to most people. Is like, save up the money and pay cash. And the stuff that you would have bought right then, you don't even buy, because by the time you saved up the money, it's like, I don't even want this anymore. You changed. So you start praying about it. If God has it, don't get bitter. Don't get angry. Don't get mad. Just ask. It's not like God can't give you what you want. It's not like God can't. He can. The question is, how are you going to respond to the situation you're in? You're in a hard situation. And you know what? I don't think you're going to be perfect, because none of us are. And I think sometimes we tend to look at what somebody else has, and we have a little envy or something, and we want that, or we think because that fits them, it's good for me too. No, maybe, maybe not. But just ask God. And he'll either give you what you need, or he'll give you what you need. He'll either give you what you want or show you that you really don't need it. And then you have to take a step and trust him. And that's what he says, rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances, because this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Look, Jesus wants you to pray. He wants you to ask him. He wants you to keep praying. He gave another story very similar to the one about the front with the bread. He goes, the woman goes to the judge who's unjust, won't give her what she wants. Then he says, well, because even though he didn't fear God or man and he was unjust, the fact that she kept coming and asking, finally, like, here, just take it. Get out of here. And he's saying, he's using that as an example. What do? We keep praying. And you know what? If you have something that's on your heart, you start asking God about it. I like that verse, the other verse, delight yourself in the Lord and he'll give you the desires of your heart, from Psalm 34, I think it was. He says, you know what? Sometimes it's like, look, you put your focus on God. And you could take the promise line a couple different ways. One, you can take it that, you know, you've put your focus on God and he's going to give you what you want. He'll give you the desires of your heart. Or you could also take it that you put your focus on God, and then you know what? He's going to give you the desires that are in your heart. And maybe it's both. Look, ask God. Pray. Seek him. Look, are you in a hard situation? If you're not in one today, just hang around today. And it's going to happen. And then the question is, what are you going to do with it? And, you know, that's kind of a couple things I saw from Hannah, Elkanah, Anaya, and Eli. Look. Let's ask God to speak to our hearts in prayer.